Hey, everyone, and welcome back to Ending the Drug War in Maine. This is Charlotte Warren, and I am here with my pal, Zoe Brokus, who's the executive director of the Church of Safe Injection. And we do this podcast, Ending the Drug War in Maine, on Justice Radio. So we just want to say thank you to Justice Radio. Hey, Zoe.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. How about you?
Pretty good.
Good. So Zoe and I wanted to give you an update today, give you, our listeners, an update today on some good news. It's rare to talk about drug policy in Maine and have like good news. So we're doing a little celebrating here. We shared with you last month information about the Maine Recovery Council. And so just for a little bit of a reminder, just a quick one, in our episode last month, we shared with you that the Maine Recovery Council was formed because Maine participated in the lawsuits suing big pharmaceutical companies who marketed addictive OxyContin. They knew that it was addictive. They lied about its addiction. Lots of folks, lots of families have been affected. We talked all about that. And we really talked about how, you know, this is blood money. This is money that will never, ever pay back the losses of human beings to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Mainers who have lost their mothers, their brothers, their sisters, their nieces, their nephews, their partners, etc. I just want to really not lose track of that fact. So with all of that money that is coming into the state of Maine, there is an entity called the Maine Recovery Council that's responsible for making the decisions on how to spend these dollars. And we are happy to announce that yesterday, as in yesterday being December 14th, 2023, the Maine Recovery Council took their first votes to appropriate some of those dollars. I'll start us off with, at the very top of the list, is pillar harm reduction for a total funding of $2.75 million. And this is going to be spent on providing unrestricted funding to support the 17 existing syringe exchange programs in the state. And since Zoe is in charge of a bunch of that, weigh in for us.
Yeah. So, you know, I think this is really exciting. And I think that it was really refreshing to hear harm reduction programming be at the top of the list. Historically, we've been an afterthought or like a dirty little secret. You know, back in the day, you just like didn't even talk about the program you were running because you didn't want anyone to know that it was, you know, receiving funding from the state in case they were like, wait a minute, we're funding what? And so to see it at the top of the list here and really, you know, providing a significant amount of money, you know, like that's not $5,000, you know, that actually will really provide some assistance to programs because there are 17 of them that are run by a handful of organizations. I think that this was something that we haven't seen before. You know, we don't have primary prevention leading at the top, and we don't have law enforcement involved here. So it's really refreshing. I think we've been a little concerned about the Recovery Council and how long it's taken for things to get up and running. I understand the need for a process and putting those pieces in place. It is the most tedious part of like putting a group of people together is that stuff. I hate it, but I'm grateful that they did it because now we can feel really confident in knowing where they all stand, right? Like they voted on this yesterday, and this is a result of that.
Exactly. And I'm so glad, Zoe, that you referenced, you know, that it isn't like prevention and law enforcement, like leading, you know, and from my experience of doing this work, you and I were chatting about this before we, you know, jumped on recording, there is always under the dome been this sort of, it's the three-legged stool, right? We need prevention, treatment, and law enforcement.
Yeah.
And you need, it's a three-legged stool, and you need to fund them all at the same level, when the truth is that wasn't even true, right? We've always funded law enforcement much, much, much higher. And just a reminder for the listeners, Zoe and I both subscribe, along with millions of Americans and most public health officials, that the war on drugs has been an abysmal failure. It has not worked, and it will never work.
Absolutely. And I think, taking law enforcement out of this equation is going to help move us in the direction that, we've just been banging our heads against the wall saying this forever, but this is public health. Like, harm reduction and responding to the, overdose crisis and folks who are using drugs chaotically, whatever you want to call it, requires a community health response. And law enforcement has caused a lot of harm. And by them sort of insisting on being part of the equation, it's just prevented us from getting to where we need to be. And the other thing I want to say is, I am not anti-prevention by any means. I am super annoyed that prevention and harm reduction are always separated. Prevention is harm reduction, and harm reduction
Yes.
is prevention. And when I say that in primary prevention settings, their heads explode. But it's really true. I mean, you can't have one without the other. And prevention should be something else entirely. And unfortunately, that could be a whole other topic of a show because, the way that we operate primary substance use prevention programming in Maine is just shockingly dull. It's incredibly boring. And it shouldn't be because it's prevention of what? It's such a broad term, there's so much that you could do there. But I think it is really important, and it's important for our youth, it's important for our families, it's important for everyone to have an understanding and a foundation of what prevention can be, and that reminder that prevention is harm reduction.
Absolutely. The prevention is harm reduction. And also that prevention is so many other things that we are failing at as a state. Prevention is making sure that people have a home. Prevention is making sure people are well, right? That they have access to mental health aid when they need it. And newsflash, everybody at some point in their life needs it, right? That's prevention, right?
How about properly funding our public schools, right? I mean, it shocks me. That's a whole other topic. My daughter started in public school this year, and I was like, okay, I can do this. I cannot be an elitist mom who sends her kid to private school. And then I was like, what? I can't even, there's 30 kids in her class, and her teacher is wonderful, but completely overwhelmed and works at home all weekend long, and makes $40,000 a year. Those kids are, I mean, it's really true. They're our future. They should be outside in nature, eating amazing foods, and they're just not.
And I just love that you just said those things. Being outside, being in nature, eating, great foods, that's prevention. Being well is prevention. Being connected is prevention, right? And we act like it's this whole mysterious thing, right? And then treatment. So there's treatment on the list, which we have been talking about, right, forever. One of the things that has been, so frustrating for me historically in this work is it is not hard to get funding in the legislature for law enforcement, right? All day long, all day long. You want to raise this? Oh, yeah, we'll pay it. We'll pay it. But to try to get money for detox facilities or for places when people want to get help, they can't access help, but we don't have any problem paying for law enforcement to then go out and arrest them and force them into help when they wanted help already, but we didn't give it to them because and that has been so frustrating. And I don't know about you, but I feel like I'm starting to see the tide turn. Like I feel like we've been standing on roofs yelling and yelling, hey, there's problems, and now people are, in power, are starting to listen. In my area, we are just this week have gotten, and my area being the Central Maine area, have gotten news of a couple of new sites that are coming that are going to actually provide, some support for folks. Both, it sounds like folks are going to be able to access medicine that they need without having to drive up to clinics in Waterville. We don't have any, I don't think we have clinics around here. The people that I know that need access to medicine for their treatment have to are driving to Waterville, right? So that's going to be a change. Some pretty good stuff here. I say you and I, Zoe, we just take responsibility for the fact that our podcast just moved them right along. And now, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
And I will just say before we, because I know we need to take a break, but I think we also just have to be really mindful of watching these treatment dollars, because it's time that we also start demanding to look at what that care looks like, because people are being harmed and mistreated in treatment facilities and have been for a long time. And we're just sort of blindly saying, like, we need treatment beds. And we do, but we also need to make sure that they're of a certain quality and that people are treated with compassion and with kindness. And like in where we are in Lewiston, we have a medical facility that has treatment beds, and they've got plenty, wide open, tons of them, can't fill them, right? So like we need to look at why that is.
Right. And to ensure that when people come asking for support, that we then support whatever pathway works for them, right? And that's definitely something we've got to continue to monitor, right? Because there is not one way to recover. And also, let's go back to, talking about the fact that we also need to continue at every step to support and love and honor people who use drugs and who continue to use drugs, right? That, like, there isn't, this idea of, like, we all aren't doing what we need to do unless somebody's in recovery. That is, I'm not going to swear, that is just not the case. It's not the case with anything. And we don't do it that way with other things, right? That you're only worthy of love and respect and celebration if you are at this one place. It's just not what we subscribe to. So we are Zoe Brocas and Charlotte Warren. We are doing Ending the Drug War in Maine. You're listening to Ending the Drug War in Maine on Justice Radio. And we thank you so much for being here with us. Zoe, I know that we've asked you these questions before, and I know that you've definitely had to answer some of these questions for me before, but I think our listeners probably would really like to know, why are you and I so thankful that harm reduction funding is coming through, and not only this $2.75 million for the existing SSPs, but that there's also one-time funding of 200,000 for a new SSP site. Why does this matter? What do SSPs do? What does it mean? And why should we all continue to make sure that this is supported?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important because historically it's been incredibly difficult to get state and federal, not just funding, but like acceptance of the work. It's a hard one for people, you know? People really put drug use in this basket of like moral failure, right? Like, well, you made a choice, you made a decision, you started using drugs. And so why should I have to pay for that? Why should I have to be involved in that? And it's like, okay, sure. Fine. I think that we've made some progress over the years. I hear less of that now. I really do. I think people are starting to understand like that, you know, that in order like there's the people who like aren't quite all the way there yet, but they're like, "Well, yeah, I get it. Like if someone's going to access treatment, they need to feel connected. They need to like how are they going to do that if they're using drugs?" And you know, we want to continue to push that further because there are plenty of people who use drugs who have no desire to stop using drugs and don't need to stop using drugs and can use drugs very safely. It is a privilege. It comes with a lot of privilege. Like, you know, being housed, being financially stable, being able to go to work and take care of your kids, like all of those things. But we just need to remember that there's like lots and lots of people who use drugs every day and do so safely and take care of their children and their, parents and whatever. And so we're starting to really see this shift away from kind of denouncing it entirely. And I do just have to share this new definition of harm reduction that we found this week that is so incredibly beautiful. And it comes from the Faith and Harm Reduction website, which you should check out because it's absolutely beautiful. But harm reduction values rooted in faith, and this is what it has to say: harm reduction is holy, faithful resistance rooted in love and unapologetically insistent on justice. It is the expression of radical welcome and welcoming of all stories and paths. Harm reduction calls people by name and attends to and cherishes the particularities. It is a hospitality that seeks people out, meets them where they are, and invites them into loving community. That is the most beautiful thing I've ever read. And I think that that is what we try to create every day in our, certainly in our syringe service program, SSP at COSI. And we do that in a couple of different ways. There are the reasons why people come into our program, right? Which is access to supplies and a place to safely dispose of their used supplies. And so when we talk about supplies, we're primarily talking about syringes. A lot of people who use drugs by injection. That injection technique is typically a diabetic syringe. And while people absolutely can become dependent on the substance that they're using, like opioids, right? People also can become very dependent on the ritual of the process. And so with injecting, there is a whole process for how that happens. And at every step of that process, there is risk for infection and risk for possible transmission of diseases like HIV and hepatitis. And so that's where our programming even began way back in the 80s, 70s, 80s, 90s, right? It was an HIV/AIDS prevention technique and has since really evolved. Here in Maine, we're a very low incidence state for HIV, but we have skyrocketing levels of hepatitis, primarily hepatitis A, B, and C. And hepatitis C is primarily it's transmitted through blood, and one of the main risk factors is injection drug use, shared equipment. And so programs like ours, that's like the pragmatic, practical reason why people come in, because syringes aren't that easy to purchase, right? Like you can go to a pharmacy. In Maine, it's at the pharmacist's discretion whether or not they will sell somebody syringes. I could certainly go in and buy syringes, right? Like probably no problem. But some of our participants, some of our friends who maybe are unhoused or, maybe have been mistreated by the medical community and aren't accessing services for mental health care or whatever, wound care, whatever, and might look a little rough around the edges or however you want to think of it, probably will not be able to access syringes at a pharmacy. And they're expensive. With funding, we're able to provide all of the supplies and services that we offer for free. And so we offer every piece of equipment that is recommended for the safest injection event that somebody is willing and able to engage in. And that varies person to person. There's sort of like best practice, and then there's like reality. And then there's everything else. There's naloxone, there's snacks, there's a warm place to hang out, coffee. And then there's just like conversation with other community members, with our staff, who will often be really, really skilled in offering some suggestions, offering education. We really encourage all of our staff to receive training in motivational interviewing. They're all certified intentional peer support professionals and recovery coaches. And so they really have those skills of like not telling people what to do. Because did you know that when you tell people what to do, not only is it like an act of violence, but it's also less likely that they're going to engage in it.
I know that's for me.
Right? I'm like, yeah, you want me to
Like
do what?
I want to do it, but then somebody tells me what to do it. you can guarantee I'll
Yeah,
go
I'm not
against
doing
my
that.
own self.
Yeah, it's just like human nature, and we forget
That's
that.
it.
And yet we tell people who use drugs all day long what they should and shouldn't do.
Yeah.
Oh, you shouldn't do that. Oh, don't do that. Don't use drugs alone. Don't do this. Don't do that. I'm like, can we stop saying don't use drugs alone, by the way? Like, can we please say, like, try not to, or like, maybe don't, not even maybe don't, just like, how about we stop telling people what to do?
I mean, think about folks who are struggling with mental health issues, same thing. We boss them around. Folks who are poor, I'm just going to use the term, folks who are poor, we boss them
Absolutely.
around.
Yeah. Oh, you shouldn't use your EBT card on junk food.
I've got to
Right.
do a 3 o'clock today with my mom. We're trying to get her some support. Talked on the phone this morning, and we'll have to talk on the phone after to debrief. And she is a person who she's lost her husband. She's on Social Security. She has a home. Things are financially really tight for her. These are, we are trying to access for her a program that is for seniors, but it is not fun for her. She will be sufficiently bossed by the time we finish that call.
Yeah.
And we'll have to do some chatting after.
And we see that a lot. Like, we have a lot of folks who are stably housed, who go to work, bring their kids to school, whatever, just like things that we all do, and yet live in fear that someone is going to find out that they're accessing our program, or find
Right.
out that they're using drugs, because they know what that equals: DHS involvement. And they are not nice, right? Like, they make sure you feel terrible about using
Yeah.
drugs, that is the source of every single problem in your life. When in fact, we know oftentimes drugs take pain away, drugs feel good. And oftentimes people use drugs to like respond to these other really harmful systems that are in place that, take our kids from us and make decisions about our bodies for us. And, drug use is one of those one things that, like, we can make decisions for ourselves. So our program is really intended to be a safe place for people to come in, get the supplies they need, access resources and services. We have an incredible peer navigator program, shout out to the state's Office of Behavioral Health, that allows our staff to really spend the time with folks to build those relationships and help connect them to whatever resources they need. And it is not focused around access to treatment, or like, did you give them referrals to treatment? Like, it's referrals to whatever, because there's very little in the way of data that shows that work in SSPs. It's all about number of syringes and number of encounters and number of participants, but there's not a lot that's like, yeah, but how many people did you talk to today, and like hang out with and give a ride to and like buy snacks for? We're able to do that with this program, and it's really allowed us to build incredible relationships. And what we're finding is that when people have community, they feel good. And when people feel good, other good things happen. We have participants who come in and like wash the windows for us, take out the trash, and not because they have to. And I tried to get them not to all the time, but they're like, no, like, I want to, like, this is my place too. That's what we want. So to see funding, specifically unrestricted funding, because a lot of the funding that we all have is for very specific purposes. Funding for HIV and hepatitis C education and outreach. We have funding for testing initiatives, HIV testing, hepatitis C testing. We have funding for our SSP to purchase supplies, but there are still federal and state restrictions on some of that money. So there's supplies that our participants are asking for and need and deserve to have that further reduce the harm associated with some of the drugs that they're using and some of the ways in which they're using, that we can't access right now because the funding that we have specifically says we cannot purchase those supplies. And so I'm speaking really specifically about smoking equipment. There has always been an extra special stigma
Yeah.
connected to people who smoke drugs, right? Smoke crack, smoke meth. We feel extra special, like we get to tell them not to do that simply because they're smoking their drugs instead of putting them up their nose. I mean, cocaine is cocaine, right? But like, if you
Right.
are smoking crack, you are a very different person, supposedly, than if you are doing lines of cocaine powder. So I think that there's no real reason why there's a restriction on smoking equipment. There just is, because people have feelings about it. And so we're really, as a harm reduction community nationwide, we're really pushing back on that. But what it means is that I have to apply to private foundations just to get like $10,000, which goes really fast, to purchase smoking equipment that allows us to interact with an entirely additional group of people who use
Right.
drugs.
That's the thing,
Yeah.
right? It allows you to expand those contacts with more people that need a connection, need community, need a navigator to help them access the resources they need and their children need, right? And your ability and your staff's ability to, no matter who walks in the door, no matter what they look like, smell like, act like, be like, you love them. And you let them know you are safe here. We welcome you. How can we help?
Absolutely. Our door is always open. That's what I say to staff. I mean, except when we're closed. But like we are no, you know, we're always an open door, even if it's a service we can't provide like directly.
And that when we see the worth in others, we help them see the worth in themselves. And we've all had that experience on any level, even sometimes when we're having a really heated day or a really bad week. And then you run into somebody and they're just like so gracious to you. And how much does it help us? You guys are able to do that to folks who really, for folks who really, really need that. And man, I just, what that quote you started with just really says it so well. Before we wrap up, would you do two things for me, Zoe? Would you share what that website is again? Faith and Harm Reduction?
Yeah, faith and harm reduction. And it's like our new favorite definition. There's a whole list of just sort of like beautiful sentences that capture harm reduction in like the true essence of it.
I love it. Thank you. And then the second thing, you know, it is the holiday season, and lots of folks are looking for ways, especially those of us who have so much privilege, you know, we're looking for ways to give. Could you share with us how can we give to most help people in our communities that need our support?
Yeah, so we are really fortunate to have a pretty incredible collaboration with Maine Needs, which is a local organization here in Portland. They collect donations and kind of serve as like a hub for organizations and caseworkers to request supplies. And they have a beautiful office space just filled with like wonderful supplies. They are super picky about what they'll take. It needs to be in really good condition because like us, they feel that like everyone deserves to have nice stuff, right? So like they won't take anything that's ripped or dirty, can't bring anything in black trash bags. Do not even mess with them. They will not take it.
Love it.
Everything needs to be folded and clean, but they're always looking for volunteers and they're always looking for donations. So you can follow them on social media, or check out their website, maineneeds.org.
So Maine Needs, as in when people need things, Maine Needs is the place to go. Thank you, Zoe, for sharing that with us. And thanks for all the work you and your team are doing. It's the real stuff. All right, everybody, we're going to wrap up. You've been listening to Ending the Drug War in Maine on Justice Radio with Charlotte Warren. That's me. And Zoe Brocas, that's her. And we'll be back next month to talk about what's up in the legislature. Thank you.
Thanks.